Welcome, everyone. I'm Claire Solomon. I'm one of the founders of Tribe and the creative director for the business. Thank you for joining this panel discussion. It's all about people's mindset around risk, which is a fascinating topic and something we know that risk professionals have been focusing on during the crisis. And as the crisis has been unfolding, it's particularly relevant right now, of course, as we're beginning to hear news about how the lockdown is going to be gradually reduced. So hopefully this promises to be a really fascinating hour. If you have been on one of our forums before, you'll see that today's session is slightly different because we're doing it as a panel session. So on the screen, you'll see our panelists, and I'm going to introduce each of those in a moment. And for everybody else, you're an audience member, so you won't appear on the screen and you are automatically muted. So you can relax, kick back, sit down and just enjoy the discussion. However, we do encourage you to ask questions and make comments, and you can do that using the Q&A section at the bottom of the screen. So we will try and answer as many of those questions as time allows within the hour. So before I hand over to my business partner, Mark, Tribe's Managing Director, who's going to be hosting the discussion, I'd like to introduce the panellists. So in no particular order, Paul, thanks for joining us, Paul. Paul is the Group Health and Safety Director for Biffa. He joined Biffa in January 2018. He's worked in health, safety and environmental management for over 20 years and has held numerous senior health and safety roles for EDF, Costain and Lango Rourke before joining Biffa. He's a passionate and enthusiastic leader for attaining excellence in leadership, risk management and workforce engagement. We happen to know that that is all true, not just what you put in the bio for me to read out, but we've had the pleasure of working with Paul and his team at Biffa over the last 6 months, where we've been helping him to develop a refreshed safety culture change program across the business, which was launched earlier this year. So thanks for joining, Paul, and we look forward to hearing from you during the session. So next, Gareth Davis is head of health, safety and environment at Nokia, which means he's responsible for the direction of the business in all aspects of employee health, from offices, R&D, labs, manufacturing and logistics through to the higher risk areas of field deployment. Gareth has 18 years of experience implementing programs that have a strong behavioural content, built on a continuous drive to make the complicated simple and to empower people to make the right decisions from top to the bottom of the organisation. We've had the pleasure of working with Gareth on some really interesting projects, including the development and launch of Nokia's global life-saving rules, the Excellence on Repeat project, which is all about encouraging people to investigate excellence with the same rigor as they do when they're investigating accidents, and most recently on the Good Day at Work program to support team resilience. So thanks, Gareth, for joining us. Next, Neil Edmonds. He's Safety, Health, Environment and Quality, so SHEQ Director at United Living Space and Fastflow. So I first worked with you, Neil, back in the early 2000s when Neil was Safety Director at Bombardier, and then afterwards during Neil's time as a Safety Director at Waits Group. Neil has 30 years experience across high risk sectors, mining, oil, gas, rail and construction. And 20 of those years were spent or are being spent at a senior level in SHEQ. So Neil told me that all that experience is being challenged now by this COVID situation. It's really testing risk management principles, how to motivate and support people and teams with varying levels of anxiety, and advising and supporting businesses for economic survival as well as health and safety. So Neil's got lots to offer to this session today. And then last but not least, we have Ella Nilakanthi Ford, who is one of Tribe's culture change consultants. Ella has spent 25 years working globally, living and working in more than 30 countries, and has set up and run businesses for multinationals in both South America and Asia. I think Ella personifies Tribe's mission to harness the power of science with the art of engagement, Ella began her career in television and broadcasting, first as a journalist and then as a producer, and subsequently has transferred into working as an international consultant and business coach in leadership and organisation transformation. She says she incorporates the neuroscience of coaching into her practice to provide a brain-based explanation for human behaviours. That sounds intriguing, Ella. Ella is one of Tribe's lead consultants, most recently working on projects for Cadent Gas, British Telecom and Openreach. So those are our panellists, and I'm just going to now hand over to Mark to kick off the discussion.
Super stuff. Thanks, Claire. Well, let me give you just a couple of minutes of context before we jump into the first question. So just as a reminder as to where all this has come from. So you may have heard us chatting about this just before we kicked off, but we've been doing quite a bit of research around some of the challenges with regards to health, safety and well-being, specifically related to the crisis. And for many of you will have seen this before or downloaded the research document. You know, we've been focusing on these four areas based on the feedback that people have been giving us. So trust, you know, how people have felt around the way that the organisation's handled the challenges so far, you know, the leadership decisions and how that's manifested itself. Resilience, a really obvious one that many organisations have been talking about, well-being and how we prepare people and look after people through the crisis and what that's going to mean for the new normal. And of course, engagement, you know, which really sits underneath all the other areas. How do we communicate and engage people through the crisis, and then what are the opportunities moving forward? Today we're focused on risk mindset. So this has been a really interesting discussion I've had with people so far, and seeing the responses that people have had to the crisis when it comes to health, safety and well-being. So some people you know, have almost taken a hero mentality and gone above and beyond as a result of the crisis. With some people have sort of almost ignored it and said, you know what, I'm going to carry on as normal. This doesn't affect the way I work. And then the other extreme, we've had people talking about a significant amount of fear that they're feeling around the crisis, and that might be fear as they're in work or even fear to go back to work. And obviously a big challenge, potentially an opportunity for us to have a think about risk mindset and what that means as we move into the new normal. So that's what we're going to be discussing today. The other aspect of this, and again, many of you have seen this already, is really interested in how this risk mindset is playing out over the length of the crisis. So this is our framework, and we played the change curve over some estimated time periods. So many of us having been in this crisis mode, and I'm sure that's raised risk awareness quite dramatically in the early phases of the crisis. And it'd be interesting to get a perspective on how that's moving as we get into the acceptance phase, the new normal, and then potentially what the opportunities are moving forward. So that's a bit of context, but enough from me. So I'm going to stop sharing my screen for now. And I am going to hand over to our panellists. I'm going to kick off with a question I'm going to ask you all, and then we'll see where the debate takes us. So in the discussion so far, you know, many of you have been saying that the new risk mindset has actually led to a reduction in incidents, and potentially see this as an opportunity moving forward. Actually, this is one of the greatest opportunities we've seen in terms of changing the game when it comes to mindset. Others have got some real concerns about how much of a challenge this is. So yes, it's great that we've got this risk mindset around coronavirus, but it's very focused on a narrow area, if you like, and actually potentially we're ignoring some of the bigger risks out there. So I'm keen to kick off with a view from you all on whether you see this more as a challenge that needs to be managed or an opportunity moving forward. So Paul, why don't you kick us off with your views on this one?
Yes, absolutely, Mark. And just to say good afternoon to everyone who's dialed in today. I'm really delighted to be part of this. So I think the sort of on-the-spot answer to the question is, I think it's been a blend of a challenge and an opportunity. Certainly felt like a challenge at the beginning. And I remember I came back from a snowboarding holiday in Austria, 3rd of March. And it was that was the week that it really felt like COVID-19 arrived at the UK, even though it had been on all of our minds and in front of us across the globe in the weeks before that. And obviously, the challenge presented itself in many forms with regards to, you know, keeping our people or getting our people on board, is to prevent the transmission of the virus and shield those that are at an increased risk of serious health effects if they contracted it. But since then, it does feel that the opportunity is now eclipsing, let's say, that the challenging or the feelings that make it feel like a challenge. Because what we've done at BEFA is we came out strong when we had to. And one of the examples that I can share with everyone where we've been able to demonstrate coming out strong and taking this very, very serious was we have great teamwork in place. So we had multi-disciplined teams set up who would oversee the direction and oversight of our response. And this you had experts and leaders from different functions coming together. So that would be safety, HR, procurement, operations, and other teams, etc., coming together. And effectively, we discuss and engage each other on a daily basis now, and have been doing now for the last 10 weeks. So the feeling of togetherness and good synergy and good teamwork and really making best use of the combined collective skill set, the feeling of sort of satisfaction being part of that is absolutely super. And that's something that, you know, once we did have good teamwork, or I felt we had a good standard of teamwork pre-COVID-19, I think that standard has been significantly lifted and raised going forward. So, it's more than I hope. I'm absolutely sure that that will continue, and that will be a new norm for us when we feel a bit more back to normal after this event has been addressed. You know, if we can do what we've done, then I'm sure we can do that going forward, because the benefits are definitely worth striving for.
Super stuff. Thanks, Paul. So you talk about some of the challenges in the initial phases, but you very much see it as an opportunity with the things that you've been doing recently, which is interesting to hear. Good stuff. Gareth, have you got a view on this first question?
Yeah, definitely. And probably.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some things are similar and some things are probably different. I think from a profession perspective, I think I'm sure a lot of us joke that for a lot of our careers, we've whispered health quite quietly and shouted safety. And what we've seen through this crisis is the thinking of the two very much, you know, coming much, much closer together, and being able to engage people in a health discussion that certainly in the types of businesses, the technology businesses I've operated in, has been quite a challenge. I think there's a pretty big opportunity there. I think what's also been, I suppose we've always had the ability, but the recognition of the ability to be able to make decisions rapidly, communicate them and implement across the business is probably at odds to sometimes the reputation we have from a safety and a well-being perspective as being slow to make decisions, being, you know, blockers to the business. And what we've seen with this is a huge amount of credibility from a functional perspective of being, you know, extremely dynamic, extremely decisive, very balanced and very clear in our communications, which of course we always have to be, but perhaps perception doesn't line up with the reality sometimes. So that's been a significant opportunity from a profession perspective then. Born out of some serious challenges in terms of managing risk, but I don't think we've ever seen a scenario of managing risk where you've had to manage the perception and the fear so heavily against the actual risk. And I think that's been a real new challenge with this, then, I suppose. You know, quite often we are dealing with a risk that is real, and once you explain it to people, it's understood. It's not very often you've got to put so much effort into getting to a balanced risk position, and perhaps the fear and the perception overtakes it. And that's been caused a real mindset shift in terms of having to be communicate in a very different way around the decision making, the thought process, the leadership actions that we were taking as a business, and perhaps the reasons why there's difference in different geographies. If I look at it from a pure risk to people perspective, I'm in the balance, and myself and Mark had quite a discussion about this last week, was, you know, in terms of, does this mean that everybody's risk perception appetite changes for the better? I'm on the fence a little bit. I have seen a little bit of individuals and functions saying, well, you know, all of a sudden we don't really care about work at height and road safety and electrical safety when we're seeing, you know, tens of thousands of deaths being reported in these areas. You know, one or two deaths doesn't seem relevant anymore. So I think there's a heightened awareness and appreciation of what we need to do as an organization in terms of keeping people safe. I'm not convinced we see all of that translating to frontline teams necessarily. From an incident perspective, we have seen a reduction, but that's probably due to, you know, not perhaps less work, but less pressure on to deliver the work in that period of time, which might well change in time, I think.
Okay, super stuff, Gareth. And yeah, we did have a big debate about this, you know, the sort of positives and the challenges, and as you say, whether this sort of almost narrow focus, which has increased risk awareness in the area around the crisis, potentially masks some of the other challenges, you know, significant health and safety challenges, which don't disappear and perhaps in some respects are significantly changed or even heightened as time goes on. Okay, super stuff. Thanks, Gareth. Neil, your views on this first question?
Yeah, hi, thanks, Mark, and again, good afternoon to everybody. Quite interesting listening to the debate. I think my take on this at the moment, and one of your slides, we're very much, in my view, still in the crisis phase. So we're still dealing with the here and now. Having time to think beyond that is proving a little bit difficult. Just as a bit of context for people who are listening in, United Living Fastflow, we're a construction and utilities company. We work in the gas field, in the water field, but predominantly our larger part of our business is construction. We closed all our sites at first, and we started reopening some of those, furloughed most of our people as well. So perhaps my experiences over the last few months or so have been slightly different in the fact that now we're trying to repatriate and re-engage with people as well as engaging with people who are furloughed. And one of the things I'm seeing, I always think that there's generally, in my opinion, two sorts of risk elements of people. They're either risk averse or risk takers. And I can see that in this COVID-19 situation. We've all had experience of that in everyday life. You know, there are still risk takers that want to go out to the park and socialise and do things. And we all, most of us will look in horror and think, why do people do that? And there's a lot of people who are risk averse. As you're walking down the street, they'll cross to the other side, which is massively more than the 2 metres that are being said. So you can still kind of see the two elements. And in the workplace, we're experiencing the same thing. And whilst there are people who are returning who have got personal fears, and we get into all the conversations I'm sure everybody gets into, it's a case of focusing on the individual and finding one size doesn't fit all. And if an individual returning to work has a particular anxiety about a certain thing, then it's helping that individual with that anxiety rather than trying to put a blanket kind of control measure in place that we think fits everything and it doesn't. In terms of reporting, it was quite an interesting one. I know it's been mentioned a few times. I mean, clearly for me, the reporting dropped off because we haven't got any sites working. So I anticipated that. What I am seeing now as we're returning is, and whilst we were in lockdown actually as well, I saw a lot more thefts, trespassing and break-ins on our sites. They were reporting of that went through the roof. And as we're coming back in, I'm seeing a lot more public interface, public threats. Public are not really happy to see us in place in a lot of cases. So the teams are dealing with a lot more verbal abuse than they used to deal with. So that's increased. I think it's been touched on, and one of the key things that we're now trying to focus and get our teams into, because it's COVID, 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 it's the only thing people are talking about. We're starting to now try to get our teams to think, but we still have to manage working at height, scaffolding, excavations, all the other kind of high-risk activities that are still there. And my personal concern, and working with some of my team that are now on furlough, is trying to make sure we get that balance readdressed such that we focus in on some of the key elements that are still there and are still obviously got serious consequences, and shifting the mindset of business leaders and business and project teams as they return to maintain a more balanced focus on the things that we're trying to manage and not get too hung up on the COVID conversation.
Yeah. Great stuff. Thanks, Neil. I'm sure that's something everybody recognises. And just we've had Liz Skelton jump in there and say that she's, I'm not sure where she's from, but she says she's seen the same in terms of a rise in robberies and violent crime through the through the crisis. So it's a shared experience there. So Ella, let me go to you lastly on this first question. And I'm going to throw some of the audience questions in there. What's your view on this?
Well, again, I would say it's both a challenge and an opportunity. And it's for the same reasons, because their humans are involved. So in terms of the challenge, people are going to go back to work. Everybody will have got their fear kind of spectrum into a different place. So people will be worried about other things. But as Neil rightly said, there's still the issue around existing issues. So it's not that COVID-19 has swept everything out of the way. Everything is still business as usual, and I think that's the opportunity, because it's a great opportunity for the leadership of a company to start thinking in an aligned way and work with people as if it is a new start, because it is a good opportunity to do that. And I don't think companies have got to that place yet. I think they're still in managing the crisis, getting on with business as usual, as we can do in the current situation.
Super stuff. Great stuff, Ella. Okay, let's jump to a couple of audience questions now. So I'm going to get a couple of you to chip in. So we've got Edgard Kochewit. Hopefully I've pronounced his surname correctly. So first question we've got here is, how do the panellists see the issue of managing COVID risks as safety risks? And does managing risks from a public health perspective or issue differ from more immediate safety risks? So I think this aligns with some of the things that you were saying, Neil and Gareth, about where the focus is in the organisation. I don't know if either of you got a view on this particular question.
I think from our perspective, it's posed more discussions from a legal and a liability side around that, rather than a risk control and a preventing contraction and spread. So from an actual prevention perspective, it hasn't really changed anything at all. But the discussion around the liability side of it, particularly in a global business and having a large proportion of an American operation, and any of you that have got an American operation will know what I'm alluding to, poses some interesting discussions. I think the point that I have been making a lot around the fear of doing things or being risk balanced and it resulting in sort of litigation as a result of it. I have sort of been very much being clear on where are the elements that are occupational and where are the elements that are public risk orientated. It's more of a legal discussion than it is, for me anyway, a practical implementation.
I think for me as well, Mark, I think that the point I would make is that I think managing the COVID is about risk management. And I do think as health and safety professionals, that is a real skill set that we bring to the table. And I think it's fantastic that businesses are engaging and we're engaging with businesses and bringing that expertise that we've developed into this arena, because it clearly is just another risk to manage. And it's our skill set and our knowledge of being able to do the controls and the ways of managing that in a business context that I think we can add value to.
Yeah, it really taps into expertise. And I was talking to somebody about this the other day. It's almost like the health and safety function or the professional body can have a bit of a moment here in terms of using your skill set to really help in such a significant situation. Yeah. Okay, we've got a sort of two-part question here from Mike Keating. So the first part of this is, potentially a large part of the shift to focus more on health will be about mental health and well-being. So interested to hear the panel's thoughts on how the health and safety profession might progress this and how it will require greater teamwork partnership with the likes of HR. So maybe I'll jump to you, Paul, first, because you talked about some of the benefits of the teamwork you've seen in BIFA already.
Yeah, no, happy to take that one.
So, you know, we have in BIFA, we have health and wellbeing expertise who are sort of placed within our HR team. And, you know, prior to COVID-19 happening, you know, we had a close working relationship anyway, because, you know, I'm absolutely sure BIFA wasn't on their own here. You know, there've been some massive strides achieved with, let's say, going from whispering about health and wellbeing to now being more vocal around just how fundamental it is to good performance and just keeping people safe and well. So, you know, we were already in a position where we were working effectively well together to promote good health and wellbeing at work, et cetera, and outside of work. And I think, you know, COVID-19 has actually accelerated, you know, the maturity around our health and wellbeing arrangements. So, you know, we've been doing a combination of podcasts or putting tips and advice together in all forms of different mediums and media, and getting that out to all of our workforce, etc. So we've been doing that. Our strategy has had that as a component. But I also feel that getting back to, or responding to, some of the questions that our general operatives have been raising with us in real speedy time, that has also had that's also been a significant contribution to how we kind of maintain good health and wellbeing across the organisation. So, you know, we've proactively asked our workforce, so we have 8,000 people working within the UK, to you know, to be vocal, to raise questions, you know, and queries, etc., that they have with regards to all of the full spectrum of matters that have come about through COVID-19. And I've been quite proud of the fact that, you know, a lot of the business senior leaders have been responding to some of our employee queries and that they've raised on our internal BIFA Beat application. And it's been really good to see that. So it's been, for me, as I said in my introduction, what I've seen through COVID-19, I think we need to maintain that, you know, once COVID-19's addressed, and that synergy between Safe Check and HR and other parts of the organisation is not a nice to have anymore or a take or leave it. It's got to be part of the norm going forward.
Yeah, super stuff. Thanks for that. And Ella, maybe you can chip in on this, because I guess BIFA, you know, it sounds like you're in a really good place around this, but I guess you've seen a range of different organisations who perhaps at different places pre-crisis and maybe trying to get to a stronger place around the combination of health and safety and HR around health and wellbeing. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, definitely changing the culture is a group exercise. And far too long, sort of health and safety has been seen as in a box somewhere outside of the business or somewhere that does. And I think somebody on this group said it's something that gets in the way of things happening. So it's really important that companies start to think about all the functions and how the partnerships, how they actually are interrelated. Rather than working in silos, which of course is going to become an even bigger issue if people are working on shifts or working from home or working remotely. It's just going to really exacerbate the issue. So it's actually focusing on those processes as well that will make a big difference.
Super stuff. Thanks, Ella. So related to that, and the second part of Mike's question, so he's got a quick build on this one, he said, but a huge question. So we could be here for a while with this one, but how do we maximise the opportunity to positively progress organisational culture, which includes mindset as a result of COVID-19? So I guess I've had a little bit of that already, but I don't know if we've got any other views on how we maximise mindset. So I'm going to chip in on this one.
Yeah, I think there's a... I think the next phase of this is going to be the key opportunity for that. Mm-hmm. Because at the moment, I think we've got a position where, yes, you've got the polarised views, you know, the heroes and those that are very afraid. But what you've certainly got is everybody with a degree and an opinion on the topic. And if any of you have had discussions around masks, and I'm sure everybody's had discussions around masks over the last couple of weeks, all of a sudden everybody's an expert in areas and everybody's an expert in masks. Yeah. But what everybody isn't, and what most of us in this profession are, and what pretty much I'm sure everybody on the call realizes, is that to make anything work, there needs to be a huge behavioral element, both in defining the level of controls you put in place, but also how you communicate about those. And I think, you know, if you take the mask topic as an example, you know, everybody that's recommending and saying, oh, we must have everybody in the offices wearing masks and all the time. It'll be really interesting once you start running a few trials. You say to people, right, you group of 20 people, you wear a mask for 8 hours and see how you get on. And I think that element of understanding the behavior in both defining those control measures, but also understanding how people react to them and therefore how effective they will be, are really important. So, yeah, I think there's a real opportunity to bring the behavioral understanding or the need to analyze people's behavior in all of these aspects when we come back to moving into a new normal, because we're going definitely to see changes in terms of, you know, working from home, the dynamics of working in the workplace and probably the workplace design around it. So I think that's, you know, that's the element that from a profession perspective, bringing that behavior to the surface is going to be, you know, a really big opportunity and really interesting to see how it evolves in the next 2 to 3 months.
Mm. Yeah, super stuff. I don't know if anybody else has got a view on that one. No, okay, all right, fair enough. Let's move on. There's another interesting question here around behaviour and how things are going to change over time from Liz Skelton. So she said that, do you think that people may be demob happy as lockdown starts to ease? That's quite an interesting one. So at the moment, you know, I don't know, I'm just thinking on the spot here, but as lockdown kind of translated into people's minds to be very focused on the rules and the things that we should be doing, we're in this kind of crisis phase, and as we start to ease, what impact is that going to have on people's psychology? I don't have any thoughts on that, Neil, but maybe we'll kick off with you on that one.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, it's an interesting question, I guess, in the fact that I'll go back to my earlier point, but it depends probably whether you're risk averse or a risk taker, I guess, because I think a lot of people will come out very apprehensive and still very cautious of what they do, even if there are opportunities to go to a pub or a restaurant or something. I can imagine people might want to just wait to see what it looks like and what it feels like and what sort of volumes of people get involved in that. And then I'm sure there'll be the other extreme where people really get quite excited about coming out of lockdown and being able to have a little bit of freedom that they haven't enjoyed before. The key element for us, I guess, in this conversation is what might the impact of that be in a work environment. And I'm not, obviously we're still in lockdown, not experiencing that at the moment. And I think there are still the element maybe of a work environment has a certain expectation of behaviour, and maybe that will still carry on, the kind of curtails some exuberant kind of horseplay opportunity and still maintains some sense of order in a work environment. The one that I'll watch with interest.
Very good. Good stuff. Ella, I don't know if you've got a view on this one as well. I've seen a range of experiences.
I was just thinking that actually it's also going to rely on national culture, because I think how people in Britain or in England, UK, England, Scotland and Wales, and how they respond may be fundamentally different than it would do in India or the States, as we were saying earlier. I think, you know, basically, yes, people, we're all going to be demob happy. You know, everybody's going to be pleased to not be mandated to be locked down. But how people interpret that into their working lives will be very different. And it will be followed by how the guidelines have been implemented over time. So, you know, look at the lax approach, perceived lax approach in Sweden compared with what we're doing in the UK. So yeah, people will be lockdown happy. How companies interpret that and manage that will be different, even where they're based.
I think a lot of that will be we will also have a big factor, people's personal scenarios as well. I can't remember who Paul or Neil said, you know, in treating it from an individual perspective. A lot of that response and that fear factor will depend on, you know, individuals' own experience of the virus and what sort of personal health situation they've got, or their close family members, or whether they know personal friends or relatives that have had it, gone through it, or unfortunately not come through it. And I think that will influence that decision making and that fear factor quite a lot. But also the behaviour of other people in the workplace as well, you know. And I think a big focus for us in terms of when we're looking at getting teams back to the office, and being a global business, we've got some offices that are opening back up. We're very, very conscious of the fact that the behaviour of people that are in the office will have a massive impact on how comfortable others feel being in the office. So it seems things like the social distancing and hand hygiene and et cetera, that will have a really big impact on that level of fear, confidence, comfort of being in the workplace.
I think another dimension I would add to that as well is individual trust people have to the science that is directing and informing the planning associated with the easing of the lockdown. So a good example of that would be face masks. You know, right up until this point, the UK government has made it absolutely clear that there is little evidence of those masks having any sort of benefits outside of clinical scenarios. That might all change on Sunday. So people will, I think, immediately question, well, how come that's changed? Where's the evidence for that? So it will challenge the trust. So you will have some people then feeling perhaps a little bit apprehensive in going back and mingling with others, you know, because there appears to be a sort of radical change in the way the science is being used to inform the planning.
And also there's the issue around public perception. You know, we've already talked about how people are attacking some construction workers. It's all the issue around mobile masks. And also, I hear a lot from some of my colleagues around discrimination against Chinese organizations, Chinese individuals, people from different cultures. Some people in Asia were having problems because they were European. You know, it's there's that fear that's also going on. As Gareth says, how people manage it in the workplace is going to be important.
Super stuff. Really interesting stuff there. I'm going to jump to a slightly more tactical question now related to mindset. So one from Duncan Aspin at the bottom here. So he said, one of the concerns is that as people are focused on the 2 meter rule, they fail to have good situational awareness that could lead to other risks. So is there any thoughts on how we manage that specifically? So I guess this is back to the point about where the organisational focus is. I don't know if you've got any thoughts on that. Maybe Paul, do you want to kick us off on that one?
Yeah, the 2 meter rule, it's been such a challenge to apply in certain parts of our operation within the waste and recycling sector. We collect municipal waste, and typically that would involve a driver being in a cab along with two or three loaders, etc. So we weren't able to apply the 2 meter distancing rule, which of course was permitted by the under the UK government guidance. So we had to make it absolutely clear that our primary controls were the self-isolation protocol and the good hand and respiratory hygiene and good workplace hygiene, etc. And then what we've done then is reduce the number of sort of social interactions. So we've had those crew members being driven out to where the start of the round is to then undertake the municipal round. So in some situations, we've just not been able to apply that 2 meter rule. But in other workplace types that we have, of course, we've been able to apply that 2 meter rule. And that sounds, you know, sounds all simple in practice, but from a personal experience, last week I went shopping, and I was watching the behaviour of everyone queuing up to go into Sainsbury's, and they've got all the markings on the floor, and everyone stood behind the markings, so the 2 metre real distancing is working perfectly. And then you get inside the supermarket, and what happens then is people are crossing each other in the aisles, so they're within sort of 2 foot, a foot of each other. So the 2 metre rule then is completely breached. But it's actually demonstrating as well that it's really difficult to apply and abide by in all these situations. So I still think there's quite a way to go to sort of operationalise good levels of discipline to the 2 metre rule in all of these sort of environments, and the sort of microsecond long instances that we have during the working day where people are coming sort of right next to each other, and you know, going shopping is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, I mean, Duncan's clarified a bit the question as well, and to build on it, he said that what he means by the question is someone could move to stay 2 metres away and step into a hazard. So I guess the fear is that by following these regulations, you introduce other risks. And I think related to it, I'd like to grab people's views on this. I was having a chat to somebody about this, and they said that actually these regulations are nudging people to behave safely, and their view was this is the thing that's having the biggest impact on the reduction in incidents they're seeing in their business. I'm wondering about the balance of doing that and sorting regulation out versus actually engaging on mindset. And does doing this solves one problem? Does it introduce another set of risks, either physical or from a mindset perspective?
Well, I think we must avoid at all costs the introduction of blind spots. So we're all, you know, entirely focused on managing the COVID-19 risks and letting that eclipse, you know, other types of risks that we had well before COVID-19 came along. So, you know, I think we should use, the question that's just been raised there then as an opportunity to really sharpen the senses around risk assessment. You know, certainly going forward, we need to make sure that the introduction of COVID-19 risk management measures doesn't compromise, you know, the other health and safety risk management measures.
I do. I concur with that. I think the element for me as well is that, and I touched on it before, we'll do morning briefings now, and the whole focus of the morning briefing is COVID-19. So it's now about challenging our teams to say there are still the other, you know, we wouldn't have done that before this. We'd have had a more balanced morning briefing that was covering the risks of the day and the activities of individual working teams. We need to sort of try and get our messaging back in that's balanced with other risks to be able to keep that subliminal, and probably even more than subliminal, that more focus, you know, clear message to people that there are still other risks out there. This is just something that we didn't know about 4 months ago, but we now need to absorb it into the way we manage sites. It's something else for us to consider. All the teams are fantastic at managing this anyway. They do it on a regular basis. Good risk management sort of appreciation on sites you go on a regular basis. This is what our teams do day in, day out. We've just given them another dimension that they need to factor in and manage. And we've got to take the hype and the heat out of it a little bit and just try and ease over the next month or two now to make it just as a business as usual kind of consideration.
The same token, though, I think the same applies, the danger of just looking at, you know, one of the suite of controls. So just looking at social distancing, not focusing on hygiene. I think in terms of communicating around this, the same way as you explained, Neil, from a site perspective is, you know, don't hone in on one. I think it's really important that when we're talking about the sort of transmission elements, there isn't much point in you being, you know, great at social distancing in the office if when you go to Sainsbury's to do your afternoon shop, you're then leaning over everybody and, you know, not wiping your hands before you go in, or not wiping your hands when you get home before you eat. So I think it's that holistic mindset, whether we're looking at the different risks that people face or whether it's looking at the controls, I think it's putting everything together, and everybody putting things together is going to be really critical.
Yeah, super stuff. Okay, so related to mindset and how this might shift over time, we've got another question here. It's actually from Mike again. So Mike's nailed the question. We've got some interesting questions on the panel today. So he's got, does this panel think this experience will contribute to a more ethical, principle-based decision-making at a senior leadership level, or will there be a reversion to the more usual, or am I being cynical? Quite interesting view, focus on P&L. And this one's really interesting for me. I guess my experience talking to many organizations is they've had to be seen to be making the right decisions, or literally just forced into making decisions that keep people safe and well because of the regulations. But it's obvious that there's going to be a fair few commercial challenges over time. So what's your views on the leadership function in the organization and how that will shift their mindset? Who wants to kick us off with this one? Some wry smiles here.
That's a really good question.
Fundamentally, I've always believed this. You know, I think the profitability of organisations will probably always be number one, and probably rightly so, because if you don't have a profitable organisation, there isn't jobs for people to go to in the first place. The change that is happening here, it's probably the first time where I've seen health be put as the number one priority and sustained and set there. And bearing in mind, you know, it's now best part of 5 months. You know, 6th of January was the first time I was having conversations on this in China. And that hasn't wavered. And, you know, I think there's also the realization that the health of employees in this situation, because it's affecting everyone personally. So it's affecting those senior executive leaders in a very similar way to it's affecting 90% of our employees, I think has changed that dynamic quite significantly. Does it change long-term decision-making? I don't know, but it certainly changes the mindset. And as this isn't going to go away for a period of time, I think having the consideration of how important employees' health is, first of all, in terms of being able to be alive and delivering work, but secondly, in terms of how closely that's linked to engagement and productivity. And I think that's probably the big hook from a mental health perspective that's never been there before. I don't think, yeah, when we've had conversations about mental health, it tends to be someone else or individuals or isolated cases. Whereas now I think pretty much everybody, if they're not having challenges themselves, certainly will definitely have team members that are having challenges themselves. And it's very, very prominent. So does it ultimately affect decision making? Possibly, because it raises the awareness and the conscience levels quite a lot.
I think, From my perspective, it's along the lines that you say. I think what I find out, I think our role, the way I view my role is often of challenging a leadership decision from a different perspective and giving a leadership team a different view. And we are often searching for and looking for examples of how decisions can impact a business viability, productivity, reputation and profit, and I can see this being a great example that we'll use over years to come. Of remember when COVID and where we hadn't seen that coming, the impact it had on the business, and I can see us using the rhetoric and the example in ways that things that happen in the future, and particularly as you say, the Gareth, that you know, our leadership teams and decision makers are very much in amongst this from a mental health perspective and with their families. It's affecting everybody. Nobody can escape from that. So I think being able to use that as a mechanism as we go forward to be able to relate it back to a business team and say, well, that decision could have the same impact as this, I think will help give us another tool to our toolbox in influencing decisions at leadership level.
I would say that that my fear personally is that the commercial imperative will overtake the fear of commercial losses will overtake the leadership alignment. So the key is to have leadership alignment on decision making and being able to engage the workforce in those conversations, because we find that what happens is leadership teams are making decisions for the workforce, for the business. But by the time it's shared with the organisation, it's all been forgotten. And the biggest risk for that will be the people who are remotely working, who are isolated, because there won't be the same level of engagement unless some real focus is put on that.
The other point I would add to that, Mark, is, you know, I think there's an opportunity for organisations to sort of instigate a period of reflection. You know, so as we sort of come to the end of the various stages of COVID-19 pandemic, you know, there is an opportunity to look back and think, right, what worked well, why did it work well, etc. You know, what I've observed in my business is, you know, a lot of business continuity planning. And you know, our people have been right at the heart of preserving the continuation of vital services to support the national effort. So, you know, I think one of the fundamental reasons or causes of that, let's say, exemplar human performance, is because we made it absolutely clear that our people's health, safety, and well-being is absolutely first and foremost. So, you know, I think ethical and principle-based decision making has paid dividends and delivered a good return. So why should that not continue? Because it's seen us through this crisis. I don't think P&L is a let's say a dirty word, but it is something that is really important. It's definitely needed, but it just needs to be delivered, let's say, in a ethical and safe way. And I think, you know, a lot of organisations are doing that already. So I don't think we should, this is just my opinion, I don't think we should fear it, but we should be, let's say, mindful of it.
Great stuff. Thanks, Paul. I'm going to build into a sort of related question. So we're thinking about grabbing that opportunity, and as you guys have discussed, you know, you've seen the dividend, as you called it, Paul, of making decisions, putting people first, and having that mindset. What opportunities do you see specifically around mindset to capitalize on this opportunity? And I don't know if any of you've started to put anything in place where you're trying to build on the mindset that we started to develop, or you've got plans in the future. But we obviously, everybody's talking a lot about the physical changes that we need to make or have in place. Are there any particular initiatives or programs or plans that you're thinking about around mindset to try and capitalize on where we are? And we've got any views on this?
I don't mind starting things off. So I right now, I've never felt more connected with my colleagues in the business, and that's because, you know, we've had daily engagements over the phone, through Zoom, through Microsoft Teams, etc. And you know, that feels really good. And I felt connected before COVID-19, but it was nothing anywhere near this standard of, or this the strength of the feeling that I've got now. So I think for me, keeping the activities going that sort of create that feeling of connectivity, which in turn, you know, makes me feel engaged, positively engaged, is something that you know, I'll be looking to promote and support in the business, and that's not just within my own team, but with other teams and with other disciplines as well, because you know, I've certainly, you know, I'm more up to date on the world of HR. You know, I understand now what furlough is. I've never heard of that before.
I don't think any of us had, Paul, to be honest.
I now understand, you know, what's involved with regards to, you know, with the world of HR, you know, and I didn't know that before. So, you know, I feel really fortunate through that. So I think keeping those engagements that we've had to sort of engineer during the pandemic is something that needs to continue with us and stay with us.
Okay, so for you, it's about that engagement, and I guess just related, I'll get other people's views on the opportunities, but I've talked to a few people about the things that they're thinking about doing around communication and engagement, but the social distancing regulations obviously make that hard from a physical perspective. Any of that kind of keeping the communication high, have you thought about that as a specific challenge? does that mean you're going to keep with the digital side of things, or I don't know whether how much you've thought about that, those restrictions around communication?
I think the piece that we're on is trying to figure out what does that percentage and balance look like in the future. Yeah. Because you obviously have a view from a cost perspective in the business said, well, you know, we don't need many offices anymore, do we? You know, 95% of our workforce has been able to work remotely. Why don't we continue with that? And I think the discussion that we're having at a leadership team level is figuring out what do we want that organization to look like, and what is that right balance, as we move forward. That's probably as far as we've got at the moment, is piecing those pieces of the jigsaw together. I think the positive is that a key driver in that is the behavior of the individuals within the organization. And that probably hasn't been there in the past. Yeah. I think that we're probably a bit early in terms of having concrete plans as to how does that affect our behavioral programs in the long term at the moment. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've certainly seen some real changes with a lot of business leaders and people in the, you know, trying to get people to engage on Skype or something historically was just a nightmare. We were a sector that was absolutely convinced, and we've grown up on face-to-face meetings, and it's the only way work can be conducted. But there's a lot of people change their minds now, and people are even saying, why was I ever getting on a train to go 200 miles to do? So I think this will survive this, and I think it will be something we need to address. I think from my perspective, I think there's an opportunity, but I would, if I'm being perfectly personally honest, we've always encouraged working from home. I have with my team. We've got flexible working and people work from home. Have we ever really sort of got understood what that means, and are people working in the best posture they can? I've always had a view that the odd day here and there is probably not going to make much of a significant impact on people's health and well-being. But if we move and shift to that being more the norm, then we need to be investing in people's home life and their home arrangements to be able to make that as comfortable as possible, which could be offset by having less office space. But I'm not so sure we've really quantified that yet. And we certainly need to be thinking along the investment route as well to allow that to happen more effectively.
That's what I was meaning about the commercial imperatives earlier, because, you know, it seems like a great bottom line decision. Oh, well, everybody's working from home. We can see it's happening. So therefore, let's do that. But, you know, as you've all been saying, in getting the engagement of people and actually making those decisions based on what will create alignment within the company is going to be very important.
Yeah, and the development of people as well, isn't it? I think there's the operation, the brainstorming, the working together, but particularly with younger team members and coming into the organisation, that sort of coaching and that mentoring that you get from within the traditional workplace is pretty difficult remotely. I'm not saying it can't be, but it's a very, very different environment. And, you know, I think that's got to play a factor in that decision-making and that planning and the structures that are in place. Yeah.
Great stuff, thanks Gareth. And just a final comment from somebody on the screen, just talking about striking the right balance, which I think echoes what you're saying. You know, there's some real opportunities there in terms of us feeling a greater connectedness, but we can't underestimate the benefits of face to face and making sure we strike the right balance there as well. So guys, thank you very much. A really interesting debate. You know, we've gone from discussing opportunities and challenges, the mindset related to social distancing, and talked about some of the balancing issues around communication and playing off a new mindset around focus on P&L and health, safety and well-being. So it's been a really good wide-ranging discussion. So thanks for your involvement. Your time is much appreciated. And I will hand over to Claire to close things then. Thanks a lot.
Big thank you to all our panellists for what you've contributed today, and of course to everyone who's tuned in. We've had some really interesting questions. We didn't manage to get to all of them, but I think the ones we picked up really helped us to explore this topic a little bit more. Based on what we've learned today and some further research by the Tribe team, we will be publishing part two of our insight document, which we'll be sending out next week. The first part got some really good feedback the initial paper. So hopefully the second one will be really useful as well. The research that we've been doing has helped us to respond to the marketplace with some brand new tools. And if you follow us on LinkedIn, you will probably have seen some of this stuff popping out on your desktops. One of the things that we heard from you is that keeping communications going with teams when they're out and about is a big issue. So we've introduced a new take on Toolbox Talks, which we're calling the Espresso Moment, which is a shot of inspiration delivered on a smartphone in the time it takes to have a coffee with a colleague. So the tool is already getting a lot of interest, and we've got some companies timing a launch with Mental Health Week, which is coming up later this month. And then finally, next week, we will be launching our new Crisis Culture Pulse Survey. It's a package that includes some communications, obviously the survey, links to a bespoke dashboard, and includes some support from Tribe consultants to help you analyse the data to keep your safety culture on track, really, as you start to phase back into the new normal. So please reach out to any of the Tribe team if you're interested in any of these new products. We're planning our next forum for the 28th of May, so look out for more information on that. We'll be letting you know. So that's it from me and everyone. Thank you again to everybody for your contributions, and we'll see you next time.